Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Because stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now, here's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
We open up the playbook today on a Thursday and welcome you into the program. John Rook, Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com radio. Pats and Cowboys, two 5-0 teams getting set up for Sunday at Texas Stadium in Irving. And again, as we mentioned on yesterday's program, only the fifth time, hard as it may be believe, only fifth time in history that two 5-0 or better teams meet in the regular season. Shocking, huh? The fact is that, you know, obviously it's very hard, especially in this day and age, and as I'm sure many of you are aware, of salary cap football to go undefeated for very long. Obviously the conversation of, you know, being undefeated for a season and the 16-0 thing has already been talked about to the point where it's kind of like, all right, do we need to go there anymore? But it will continue to be a part of our discussions, as I've mentioned already a few times, as long as somebody stays undefeated. And it will stay a part of the discussion probably until somebody actually does meet or surpass what the Miami Dolphins did back in the 70s. Obviously, it's a different scenario now. Back then, it was a 14-game regular season. It's 16 now. So technically, you'd have to go 19-0 to surpass what the Dolphins did in 72. But fifth time in history, two 5-0 teams met, or if they were better. The other four games, just in case you were wondering, and you may have seen this already, but just in case you haven't, and the NFL has been playing this up real big this week, which is why you're seeing ESPN and NFL Network, and, I mean, the hype is out. The hype is definitely out. You know this. If you pay any attention on the national level, the hype is definitely out. In fact, I just heard Jerry Jones, the owner slash general manager of the Cowboys on Mike Tirico's show on ESPN Radio just not 15 minutes ago. So they're definitely building up the hype all over the country, but doing it largely from a Cowboys perspective. That's why I still believe largely, especially now in light of Spygate, Dallas Cowboys are once again back to being right there, if not already there, as America's team. I know the Patriots were after 2001, and to a certain extent over the next 3 years, even through the 2004 Super Bowl, but especially since Spygate, and especially because what the Patriots are doing in the salary cap era is treated somewhat with disdain. It's kind of like, oh, not the Patriots again. Are they ever going to lose? And I do think there's a lot of envy around the NFL when it comes to considering the Patriots, and so that's why I think people are kind of like, oh, well, you know, actually I might find myself rooting for Dallas because they don't want to see the Patriots win again. The other four games, back in 1921, on November the 13th, the Akron Pros and the Buffalo All-Americans. Akron was 7-0 at the time. Buffalo was 6-0 at the time. And on that November 13th, they tied 0-0. How about that? So they technically both stayed undefeated. November the 4th, 1923 was the second time this occurred. And that would be the Canton Bulldogs and the Chicago Cardinals. Both teams were 5-0, and the Canton Bulldogs defeated the Cardinals 7-3 that day on November the 4th of 1923. Then you had to go 50 years before it happened again. Can you imagine? 50 years. October 28th, 1973, the Rams and the Vikings playing at Minnesota, at Minneapolis, Metropolitan Stadium, and the Vikings and the Rams were both 6-0 that day, and the Vikings beat the Rams at home 10-9. And then the last time that this occurred, as I'm sure Patriots fans are undoubtedly aware, it involved the Patriots at home here at Gillette Stadium back on October the 24th of 2004, just 3 short years ago. And, of course, the Pats beat the Jets here. Both teams were 5-0, and the Pats won the game 13-7. So those are the previous four times in NFL regular season history that teams at 5-0 or better met during the regular season. So this is still a rare occurrence. I realize it's only been 3 years since it happened, but when you consider that there were 50 years between occurrences in this streak, it still is a significant occurrence in the overall scheme of things in the NFL. And a lot of great individual matchups in this game. I mean, we talked a little about this on yesterday's program if you didn't join us, and we were asking for you in particular, whether you were a Patriots fan or a Cowboy fan listening to the broadcast, we asked where you thought your team had a definitive advantage. In what part of the game, what part of the football team, what part of the field did your team hold a definitive advantage over the opposition? Talking about Cowboys versus Patriots and vice versa. And so the matchups here are, they're really good, even though, quite frankly, they don't actually go against each other. But the obvious one is certainly Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. They've been talking about that all week. Obviously, Owens had a rather humorous little message on his taped on his locker for members of the Dallas media to take in yesterday. You may have seen that on your local sportscast or on ESPN or on some various outlet, saying that he wasn't going to take any questions until after the game and calling himself the original 8-1 and the second 8-1, of course, referring to Randy Moss in that particular instance, which I think is humorous. I mean, you know, whether you like him or not, I mean, Terrell Owens, he may be all about trying to, you know, plug Terrell Owens, but the fact is that he's sort of got an irreverence to him that, quite frankly, I think we're all kind of used to now. And you know, and the one thing that I think the NFL can always use is a little more fun. And I actually think sometimes it may be in a little bit of a bass ackwards way, if you like, if you understand the meaning. But I think that's what he's all about. So I, you know, it's fine, it's okay. But obviously, that's the one matchup. You've got the, you know, Tom Brady versus Tony Romo. You got Brady of the present against, you know, potentially, I've heard in several circles this week, the Brady of the future in Tony Romo. And, you know, hard to dispel that. I think, you know, Romo certainly is a different style of quarterback than Tom Brady. I think Tony Romo, in fact, I heard this analogy yesterday, and I happen to agree with it. Romo is a young Brett Favre. He has a lot of the same characteristics of Brett Favre at quarterback. He's got, you know, a toughness about him. He's got that ability to kind of pick a team up when he knows that he needs to pick a team up. He's got that sort of a gunslinger mentality where he'll throw a pass into a spot that he probably shouldn't have done it, and he might get it picked off, but it won't cause him to back down and be afraid to do it again if he thinks that's the best way to get the team down the field. Obviously, it didn't happen very well for him last week against Buffalo, but fact is, the Cowboys won the game, so hard to argue with it overall. And he certainly got some foot speed and some ability to run out of the pocket and to create things where there is nothing. And so I think that's what a lot of people like about Romo. And while he's certainly an unfinished, an unpolished product, fact is that he's got the capability, I think, of leading his team. You've got the top two offenses in the entire NFL matched up. Pats of number one, Cowboys number two. You've got, in total offense, it's actually Cowboys number one by just like 5 yards and the Patriots number two. But you've got the top two scoring offenses in the league with the Patriots number one and the Cowboys number two. So great matchups on that side of the football, on the offensive side of the football. You notice that I've mentioned only offensive players and offensive facets and aspects to the football game. Defensively speaking, I think the battle, when you have two very solid teams going at each other, the battle always comes down to the trenches, and certainly field position turnovers. It always does when you have two teams that are of like and equal ability. But this is where I think the Dallas Cowboys have shown the most improvement from last year to this year. They've had a tremendous amount of solidarity and consistency in the play of their offensive line. I think the Cowboys' offensive line is vastly improved. Mark Colombo, local fans here in New England might remember him from his days as a standout offensive tackle at Boston College. And he was a first-round draft pick of the Chicago Bears. And he got himself hurt early in the process, and he was a bust for Chicago. And he was picked up basically off of the scrap heap by the Cowboys. And even though he struggled at times last year, he has had a superlative time this year. He's had a very solid season. And the Cowboys will be counting on Mark Colombo to keep the Patriots' edge rushers out of the offensive backfield. I think that will certainly be one key you can look at. Obviously, you can flip it the other side, but Matt Light has had a tremendous year as well for the Patriots in keeping Tom Brady relatively clean and his jersey undirtied. But the play of Colombo on that offensive line with Andre Girard having moved to center and Flozell Adams having a better than expected year overall. I mean, the Cowboys' offensive line has been a huge factor. They've kept Tony Romo relatively clean as well, and that play of that line has opened up enough lanes, especially for a guy like Marion Barber, who I think is a vastly underrated running back, and it allows Romo to make plays, which is what he does best. And that offensive line is the catalyst for that Cowboy offense. And I believe that will be a big factor for the Patriots on the game on Sunday, whether or not they can actually get penetration and get by that improved Cowboys offensive line with the front seven and create some havoc, not only by giving Romo different looks, but by, on occasion, maybe taking that well-planned opportunity to blitz or jam the box and then fall back into coverage. And you know that's definitely being worked on by the Patriots this week. But I really feel that's going to be the key to the football game on Sunday. How well the Patriots defense can penetrate that Cowboy offensive line and cause problems for Romo. And if they can just slow them down even a little bit, and you force the Cowboys into some second and third and long situations where they have to go over the top, and then you can change defenses again and put extra coverage back there, and certainly get pressure with your front three or four, whoever, how many they decide to rush, then I think that will tip it over in the Patriots' favor without too much of a problem. Because I do think that while the Cowboy defense is improving, we've seen their quickness, especially over the last couple of weeks, I do think that the Patriot offense will be able to move on the Cowboy defense. I think that they'll probably, I think teams will look at what Cleveland did last week to give the Patriots a few problems. I think teams are still ultimately going to play their game. And I think the Cowboy offense Patriot offense will be able to move on the Cowboy defense. I certainly think the Patriots will be able to get into the 30s on the Cowboy defense. But the question is can the Patriots defense hold the Cowboy offense down, keep them in, say, the teens or the 20s? And so I think the general consensus, after listening quite a bit to the national perspective, both on television and radio over the last couple of days, general consensus is that we're going to get a 30-something to 20-something football game. And the majority of the people think that it will be the Patriots in the 30s and the Cowboys in the 20s. The spread, I've noticed, started at 4.5, and I noticed this morning at 5.5. So the early money is going on New England because the spread has jumped a point in 24 hours. And a 5.5-point favorite on the road, that's pretty significant. That means people think that overall that the Patriots are about a touchdown and maybe a little bit more better than the Dallas Cowboys. It's going to come down to the Patriots' defense at least slowing and confusing the Cowboy offense a few more times, a few extra times. I'm sort of tending to think that this game is going to be a little closer than most people consider it. Although, with all due respect to the 5.5, I think that actually is about right now. I think that's about right. I'm angling myself more toward a 31-24 or 31-27 type of score frame. That's what I'm feeling now. That's what I'm thinking, at least right now here on Thursday. And so that leads me to my email question of the week for you. It's Thursday, people, so let's fire off the score predictions. I know you've been waiting to do this all week. This is the biggest game in the NFL regular season to this point in time. Week 6 of the NFL. And you've got two 5-0 teams going at each other for only the fifth time in league history. You're dying to get your two cents in here. So not only do I want you to give me your score prediction on Sunday. But what I want you to do is tell me where you think this game will be decided. I just told you where I think it will be decided. I think it will be in the trenches between the Patriots defense and the Cowboy offensive line. That's where I think the game decision will be made. Is there another area of this team that you think will decide this football game? Turnovers, field position, Patriots offense, you know, how they can exploit maybe a guy like Roy Williams or Terrence Mathis in the defensive secondary? That's what I want to know from you. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. You know it already, but I repeat it for you anyway in case you're uninitiated to the program here. Webradio@patriots.com. So fire off your score prediction and fire off if you've got a decision to make, if you've got a definitive idea on where you think this game hangs in the balance on the football field. Tell me where you think that competitive imbalance might be. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. 508-543-7482. We do have a ton to get to again today, as I told you yesterday here on the program. Coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll let you listen into Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. And then Russell Baxter, our NFL research coordinator for ESPN's networks.
You know I don't speak Spanish.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
Hit the wrong button, did you? That happens sometimes. Russell will join us in approximately 25 minutes from now. And then in the second hour of the program, we go inside the Patriots locker room for you exclusively here on Patriots Playbook. And we've got about seven different guys that we have talked to over the course of the last day and a half, 2 days, and to get their thoughts on preparing for the Dallas Cowboys. So all of that is coming up inside the playbook here today. So get your predictions and get your theories of where this game is going to break down in now. Webradio@patriots.com. That's how you reach us here on the program. All right, we're going to sneak in a timeout here, and then Patriots head coach Bill Belichick right here in the playbook.
Your New England Revolution have been one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer all season long. Summer may have turned to fall, but the soccer action is still hot at Gillette Stadium. Taylor Twellman.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pat Newman.
Shot, and it's in! Patrick Newman!
And the rest of the Revs are looking to finish 0-7 strong and get revved up for the playoffs. Get to Gillette Stadium as the Revs make their push for the playoffs in a third straight trip to MLS Cup. With a few pivotal regular season home games left, it's not too late for you to be a part of the action. Tickets for the rest of the season are on sale now and start at just $18, making Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS or Ticketmaster at 617-931-2222 and get your ticks, get your kicks, and get the Revolution.
Get your kicks, the New England Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers, mild and Hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Cowboy.
How about them Cowboys, huh? We have Jimmy Johnson's drop on that one somewhere? No? Welcome back as we continue with Patriots Playbook.
Every time I've ever seen it, it has music underneath the toy.
Gotcha. Frank sent a note. Says the current spread out of Las Vegas is 6 points. All right, so it's increased by a half point since I saw the last spread earlier today. It was this morning, I believe. It was 5.5. So it's increased by another half point, which tells me, again, the money's still moving the Patriots' way. A lot of people think that the Patriots will be able to jump all over the Dallas Cowboys based on what is being said throughout the country. So, you know, the action continues on this game, and the notoriety and the interest continues on this game. And we're glad you're with us. Whether you're a Patriots fan or a Cowboys fan, the idea here is to create some discourse and some conversation, and I want to hear from you today. Webradio@patriots.com. Who's going to win the game? Tell me where you think the game will be decided. What part of the football field will this game be decided? What facet of the football game will this game be decided? Where's the make-or-break area for your particular team? Webradio@patriots.com. So plenty of time to get your picks in and your thoughts on the game on Sunday. In the meantime, this is the 10th game overall that the Dallas Cowboys and the New England Patriots have met in the football field. After all these years now. All these years, Patriots, of course, since 1960, Dallas Cowboys began in 1960 as well, when they were an expansion team in the NFL. And of course, the Patriots came in with the old AFL before the merge in 1970. But this is just the 10th time these two teams have ever faced each other. You'd think that it would have been more over 48 years, but really it hasn't been. The Cowboys hold a decided 7-2 advantage all time over the Patriots. Dallas won the first 7 games. The Patriots have won the last 2. Last game, the last time these two teams met, we talked a little about this yesterday, was in 2003 here at Gillette Stadium. In November of 2003, November 16th was the date, and the Patriots pitched a 12-0 shutout that day. The last time that the Cowboys won was in 1996. And the Cowboys won in Dallas, which happens to be the last time these two teams met in Dallas. Last two times they've played here in New England, here in Foxborough in 2003, and the previous time before that was 1999, which was a 13-6 Patriots win. Those were the two Pats wins. The last time they played in Dallas was the last time the Cowboys won the game. It was 12-6 for the Cowboys back on December the 15th of 1996, so it's been a while since Cowboy fans have had a chance to see the Patriots at Texas Stadium. Now, that has really no bearing on what's going to happen on Sunday. Just a little history lesson for you overall, that these two teams, even though, you know, they're studying up on each other, there isn't a lot of familiarity here. There are some common threads with players who were teammates in college on both rosters, some LSU guys and such, but fact of the matter is that the Cowboys were the team that everybody wanted to emulate. Everybody wanted to copy from the 1970s. And again, late 80s, right into the early 1990s when they were winning, you know, their 3 big Super Bowls in the 90s. Cowboys were the team everybody wanted to copy. Cowboys were, and as I mentioned earlier, may still be, America's team overall, whether you like Jerry Jones or not. Patriots have become the team now in the 2000s that everybody's trying to emulate, everybody's trying to be like, and probably envy just a little bit. So you have the two most recent dynasties in the National Football League facing off, in addition to the fact that both teams are 5-0. This is the clash of titans. That's exactly what it is. And on top of all of this, you have arguably the two best teams in the NFL, certainly within their respective conferences, meeting on Sunday. And I'm not dispelling the Indianapolis Colts at all. since I know we have regular emails listening to us who are Colts fans. And the Colts will have every opportunity to prove their worthiness coming up on November the 4th when the Patriots go to the RCA Dome. So that's fine. That's fine. We'll deal with that another day. But the fact is that the Cowboys look to be head and shoulders above everybody else right now in the NFC, and you can certainly make an argument for the Patriots being a favorite in the AFC. So, yes, in Week 6, this could be a Super Bowl preview. It could be a Super Bowl preview. In fact, I'm looking here. It says here that we actually have some Cowboys players that might have already played against the Patriots at some point. I'm looking through some of the Dallas notes that I've been able to glom onto this week, but I don't think that that's entirely accurate. Yeah, there are a few players on this Cowboy team that have actually faced the Patriots from either 2001 or 1999 or 2003, most likely. Akin Adell, Greg Ellis, Ken Hamlin, Anthony Henry, Terrence Newman played in that 2003 game. Terrell Owens obviously played against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Roy Williams, Jason Witten. So there are a few Cowboys that have faced the Patriots. All right, before we get to Coach Belichick, let's talk to Craig in South Carolina. Hey, Craig, how you doing?
I'm fine. How you doing, John?
Great. What's up?
Well, you asked for the fans' feelings on this game.
Yep, go.
First off, I don't think that Dallas has the balance on offense in order to sustain drives. Their running game stinks. They haven't faced a defense as well balanced as ours is. The way I look at it is, of all the Dallas players that I fear on their offense, if we shut down Witten, they won't put up 14 points against us. I'm not at all. I mean, Witten is the man. T.O. gets all the publicity, and Witten just kind of stays back and does what he does very quietly. He's not, renowned in the league, I don't think, as a premier player, but he's definitely Romo's playmaker. As far as Dallas's defense, basically their secondary, the success of their secondary, is largely a reaction because they've gotten a decent pass rush on teams. Their secondary is not quick. They're not that great. Henry is banged up. Roy Williams, that's the scariest thing about this entire game because, I just really fear this. Roy Williams, pulling the old horse collar on Randy and just taking him out. And that's the only thing that bothers me about this game. I'm completely confident this is going to be at least a 14-point victory.
Wow. All right. Well, you know what? Your point about the Cowboys secondary is an appropriate one because you're right. A lot of times weaknesses in secondaries are masked by the fact that you're able to get a pass rush with your front three or front four. So I think the Cowboys definitely benefit by the quickness they have in their front seven overall, and that allows their secondary to stick with the receiver just long enough to be able to break on the ball and make a play. So
and if anybody can exploit that,
yeah,
it's definitely Bill and the Patriots. I mean, between the personnel packages they have on their run blocking and in their pass protection, I'm just looking for Wes and Randy and, just to have a very good game. And I think our passing game is going to set up our running game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the passing will set it up. And I also believe that the Patriots can take a lot of the quickness out of that Cowboy front seven by dinking and dunking and setting up mid-range opportunities just to space them out a little bit, not allow them to get their different substitution packages into the game. And then when they do, jam the line, hit them over the top.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think we're going to be running a lot of misdirection, to try to compensate for or adjust for their speed drills that they run, their blitzing and whatnot. I just don't think there's any way Dallas is going to be able to keep us under 30 points. And quite frankly, I don't think they'll ever going to see 20.
So give me the score then, Craig.
I think New England 37, Dallas 17.
37-17. All right.
Yep.
Craig's on the record. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
And Gary blows you up lovingly, Craig. Lovingly.
We got to get the bill.
That's exactly right. All right. Webradio at Patriots.com. Send us your score prediction and your thoughts on the game. Do it now. We'll get to it after we hear from Coach Belichick.
Yeah, we're moving right along here. Going to get into some situational stuff today and more of it tomorrow. So the more I look at Dallas, the better they look. They're very good at everything. Got a good third down package, both sides of the ball. Good punt return. Good punting game. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Phil, Jason Garrett being the new coordinator this year, how do you go about preparing for him when you only have a few games to go by?
You go by those games, you know. We know a little bit about him in the past. Other people have been with him. You know, it's a little bit of the, you know, North Turner system. Not completely, but there's certainly a lot of elements of it. So, you know, it's, hey, they played five games. Played against a couple of real good teams. You know, I think they probably went with their best stuff. You know, that's a good thing about the regular season that, you know, after four, five, six, seven games, you know, you get a pretty good look at, I mean, whatever they got, there's nothing to save it for. It's not like preseason.
Was this pretty impressive? I know you obviously drafted Maroney, and yet I'm sure you looked at Barber when he was coming out of college.
Yeah, you bet.
Was it pretty impressive seeing two backs like that in the same backfield on college team?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can see why they won. Those two guys, 2,000-yard backs, and yeah, they're both very good. You know, Barber's done a great job, too, in the passing game. You know, he did in college, and he's been very good for Dallas. He's got great hands. Good route runner, real instinctive in a passing game, hard to tackle. Oh, those are two good backs. And being on the same team, you know, there's a number of examples of that. You know, the Thurman Thomas, Barry Sanders, and that kind of thing. But I mean, those two guys are really good playing the same college team.
How do they play off each other? Can you see how the two of them kind of complemented each other skills wise?
Well, what they did at Minnesota was in Lawrence's when Barber's senior year. Lawrence's sophomore year, yeah, whatever. Ben Lawrence was more of the tailback, and they split time. But then Lawrence, when they were in there together, Lawrence was a tailback, and Barber was flanked out. Then the next year, Lawrence's last year, in that same situation, and Lawrence played more of the extended back, and they had another kid in there that was more of the I back. So they kind of used the more experienced veteran player to be more involved in the passing game, split out, you know, get involved that way. When both guys were on the field, you know, there's a lot of times when it was just one of them. Yep. No, it was pretty impressive. You're watching Barber, and he keeps saying, "Who's that guy?" You know, it's Maroney, and you know, they're, it's, you know, unusual to have two backs of that quality at the same, you know, playing the same position, and basically a one back offense.
What's the most dangerous part of Romo's game?
All of it. He can beat you a lot of different ways, and you've got to be careful about just saying, well, we're just going to take away one thing, because he's good at everything. He can throw the ball down the field, make the intermediate throws, get the ball to his receivers on catch and run plays. He can stay in the pocket. He can get out of the pocket by design or not by design. He can beat you throwing on the run. He can beat you running. So does everything well.
Bill, do you see any parallels between Romo and Brady and the way their careers have evolved? How quickly they...
You're talking about...
Once they get the chance.
Yeah, well, I mean, Romo's only played how many games? 15 games, whatever it is. So... But, yeah, no, he's done well. I mean, he's gotten in there and they've won. And that's the quarterback's job, is to win, you know, to me. It's not about stats, it's not about quarterback rating and all that, it's about winning, doing what you need to do to win. And Romo's done that, you know, and Tom did that. So from that standpoint, I think there's certainly a good comparison. In terms of style of play and, you know, all that, I'm not sure that, you know, that there's a lot of similarities. I think there's some, but, you know, they both definitely have a different style of play, but they're both very effective at it.
Have you seen any parallels Tom's career with any quarterback?
Oh, no, I'm just a lot more concerned about trying to get our team ready to go and trying to improve it and all that. And, you know, rather than
know, make parallels to every other team and player and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I'm sure there are some. We're really a lot more focused on trying to get our team ready to go, get our players to play their best, try to do a good job of coaching them.
What are your first impressions of
Ware
and what you've seen of
him? Well, you know, we saw a lot of him in college when he came out in the draft. I thought he was probably the best player in that draft. He's certainly a dynamic player in all phases of the game. He can rush, he can cover, he can play the run. At the point of attack, he can chase it down from behind. He's got power, he's got speed, he's hard to knock off his feet. He's quick, he's a tremendous athlete. He's a good pass rusher, but he does a lot of other things well, too. I mean, he plays the run well, and he's good in coverage when he's asked to do that. He can play on his feet, he can play in a three-point stance. He's a force.
Bill, you said a couple of weeks ago that practicing against Randy Moss helps those defensive backs prepare for a Randy Moss kind of receiver in a game. Does Terrell Owens fall into that category?
Into what category?
Like a Randy Moss. You said those defensive backs, it helps them prepare for receivers like you.
I think they're different. I mean, I'm sure there's some similarities, but I think they're different receivers.
Bill Parcells and all this week if you wanted to find out something about one of them.
Okay. Talk to Bill.
Are you happy with the offensive ball security so far? Fumble-wise or...
I think the numbers are okay. I think we can do a better job of protecting it, though. I really do. I don't think we're always as... have as much awareness and a conscious security of it as we should. So, therefore, I think if we continue to do that, it's just a matter of time until we lose the ball more frequently. So, that's point emphasis, especially this week. You know, Dallas being such a good turnover team, but I think we gotta do all we can to take care of it. The numbers are okay, but I think we can do a better job protecting it.
I mean, you're looking at the film and you're seeing a guy who doesn't get it stripped, but he fundamentally isn't doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that was right. That we don't, with the guys, the players that are handling the ball don't handle it quite as, they don't secure it as well as they could, let's put it that way. You know, and so if nobody's pulling it out, then, you know, you might be okay with it. But if somebody is, then you probably wouldn't be. And they, you know, Dallas does a good job of it. They rake it out. They turn it over in interceptions, strip sacks, you know, stuff like that. They do a good job of it. They're looking for it, and they get them. Now, they haven't recovered them all, but there's a number of times where they've gotten the ball out and, you know, it's come back to the offense or they call the play dead and the whistle blew or whatever. But you can see them getting the ball out, and they're good at it.
Could you pick one word to describe Vrabel, Mike Vrabel?
How about two? But tough and versatile. Different in a lot of ways, but similar to Pepper. You know, Buckeyes do a lot of different things. Tough. I don't know if either one of them would take that as a compliment or an insult. I don't know, but... Having coached both players, they both, in the systems that we've been in, they've done a lot of different things. They've done it very well, and they're both tough and durable.
I know you don't like to compare things, but do you challenge your linebackers with references to those Giants teams and those crews that you did, that you coached before?
No. When we've talked about the Giants linebackers, it's been more in terms of teaching and instructional. Because, again, those guys were not only good players, but they were good players within our system and doing the things that we do. And so I think there's good examples of the techniques or the anticipation or the way that, you know, certain things that they did them that has application to what we do. So it's been done more in that. With that type of theme in mind, because each player is different. Every guy's got his own style of play. I don't think, you know, one guy has to play like another, but if we make a call and we get a certain look from the offense, and then it's easy to say, well, this is how that plays, or you know, this is how we're going to handle that situation, just like these guys handled it, you know, and that's it's done more that way.
Is that applicable to every group of linebackers, though? Is that something maybe you couldn't have done without a Junior Seau and a Denelius Thomas here?
They weren't here 2 years ago.
Right. Reference.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Look, I'm just let's try to coach a team and get them better. You know, can't worry about all that. I mean, if you got an example of something, you can show a team, hey, this is how we did it. This worked. I think it'll help make you a better player. Yeah, I wouldn't hesitate to do that for a second.
Have you seen Brandon Merriweather become comfortable with the defense at this point? I know you moved him around a little bit in preseason.
Yeah, I think his production's his production's been better. You know, on a per play basis. You know, both in the kicking game and on defense. You know, he showed up on more plays, made more good ones, fewer that aren't as good. And that's also been true of practice.
Is his versatility one of his greatest strengths at this point, especially with
sure, it definitely helps him. Yeah, it helps him, it helps us.
That's what I mean, because of his role as sort of being a backup.
Right. Yeah, we've gone through a couple of transitional things in the secondary, you know, since the beginning of camp. And even up in, you know, including last week, you know, with Rodney coming back. And so that type of thing. So there's been, you know, we've had a number of different personnel situations in the secondary, and he's been a guy that's been one of the more versatile players, and he's been, you know, a moving part in that entire group.
Has he struggled at all with that or handled it well learning?
Well, I think there's always challenges with it. Yeah, I'm not saying it's perfect. He makes mistakes, and then we correct him, and then hopefully he doesn't make them again or reacts a little bit quicker the second time or third time that he sees it. But, you know, he's got a lot of learning to do because he's playing so many different positions or has played so many different positions through the course of camp. But, again, I think in the long run that's good for him. It's good for us. And you know, he can handle it.
Hey, Bill, any plays that have surprised you this year on offense, your offense, when you call the play, defense shifts, and you're saying there's no way this is going to work because the defense shifted too late and it works anyway?
That
ever happened to you, I guess.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot of times you know, you want a certain look for a play and you don't get that look, and then you're thinking, well, this isn't really what we were hoping for, and it turns out okay. And there's plenty of times when it doesn't turn out okay, too, you know, so. But, you know, in the end, it comes down to, like we always talk about, it comes down to execution, you know. I mean, the X's and O's and all that's, you know, it's only, you know, so much of the game. It comes down to, you know, blocking and tackling and throwing and catching and execution. So, you know, sometimes you can be in a good defense and not stop a play. Sometimes you can be in a defense that's really not that great and be okay.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium, visiting with members of the Patriots media. Still time to get those emails in, your predictions, your thoughts on the game Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys at Texas Stadium, 4 p.m., 4:15 p.m. Eastern Time kickoff. Send us your thoughts, webradio@patriots.com. We'll get to some of those in a couple of moments. Right now,
yoo-hoo, Baxter!
Yeah, we welcome in our good friend Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator. Good day to you, Russell. How are you?
Hey, John, what's going on?
SOS, SOS. You know, man, that as well as anybody, right? We're getting ready for a little brouhaha. I find it, you know, amazing. In the long and storied history of the NFL, as the league has certainly pounded home to many of us throughout the course of the week, including yourself, that this is just the fifth time in history that two 5-0 teams have squared off in a regular season. You know, that's I think that in all of the years of superlative play, to have this just be the fifth time that's happened, I think it's extraordinary.
Yeah, it just shows you the oddity of and so on, and two of those are way, way back and so on, more the modern day. You know, the Patriots a couple of years ago with the Jets in 2004, and then the other modern one is the 73 Vikings Rams matchup.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it doesn't happen. Although, how funny would it be if New England manages to win this weekend and Indianapolis continues to win? We might see it repeated.
We'll have it for 3 weeks. Have it for a second time in the same season.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Which would be a first in NFL history.
Right.
So I think that's kind of cool. The other thing I'm looking at, and the fact is that I don't think either one of this weekend's teams, speaking of the Cowboys and the Patriots, fall into this category. But since 2000, and I know you're good with the numbers here, 39 teams that finished through 5 weeks with a winning record did not make the playoffs. Now, I don't think either one of these teams fall in that category, but that's a lot of teams that had a minimum a 3-2 record and didn't make the playoffs.
Well, we make such a big deal at times of the starts here and the starts there, and I think a lot of times we forget that with every good start, I shouldn't say every good start, but with your share of good starts, there's usually somebody that falls off, and usually there's somebody who gets off to a terrible start and then comes out of nowhere. I mean, we saw the Minnesota Vikings in 2003 go off 6-0. And not make the playoffs.
Right, right.
You know, you've seen other teams. The one of my favorite, well, I shouldn't say favorite, it's not the right word, but the Leon Lett game in 1993, when Miami, you know, pulled the improbable play and Leon Lett touched the field goal attempt that was missed.
Right.
Put the Dolphins at 9-2 that year. They lost the rest of their games and did not make the playoffs.
Wow, I didn't even
realize. And the Dallas Cowboys that year never lost another game.
Never lost another game. That's right. That was a Thanksgiving game, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. So, you know, I think the Raiders, I want to say the Raiders a number of years ago, might have been mid-90s, they saw an 8-2 and lost their last six games. So, you know, you got to be steady. You got to be consistent. Now, when you're talking about steady and consistent, you're talking about the Patriots. You're talking about the Colts. And so far, even though with a few bumps on Monday, but sometimes wins like that can be can catapult you to thing, the Dallas Cowboys, who never gave up, despite Tony Romo throwing five interceptions, fumbling another time. But it just shows you that, you know, there's a lot of time, and there's one thing about falling behind a certain amount of points, and there's another thing where I kind of draw the correlation that I saw the bad correlation. I saw the Mets a couple of weeks ago get down 7-0 to the Marlins. In the game, which in essence, you know, it was the collapse of their season. It's one thing when you're down 7-0 in the first inning, and 7-0 in the ninth. As it turned out, they never rallied. But when you're constantly behind, but you never quit, and that's what I think you saw out of Dallas. And they got the onside kick, and they got a great rookie kicker, and had to make the kick twice, but he did it, and they're still undefeated.
Right. You all right there?
Yes, I'm here. Okay. I get very emotional when I talk about kicking.
You do.
Yeah.
That's very true. All right, we'll kind of skip around the league a little bit. We'll come back to the Cowboys and Patriots because it's clearly the top game in the league this week. With all due respect to the other games going on, it's pretty easy to see why that is. And frankly, as I look at the rest of the Week 6 schedule, I'm not terribly intrigued by a lot. There are a couple of games I think that could prove to be interesting, and obviously there are a couple of games that could be make or break for some teams. The game that I think matches up as perhaps a surprisingly good game and certainly could set the winner apart from a lot of teams in the NFC is Washington playing at Green Bay, because you have the Redskins at 3-1, you have the Packers coming off their first loss at 4-1 at home, and I wonder if this game legitimizes the winner.
I think in some ways it does. I think some people feel that Green Bay is legitimate because of the start they got off to. But then again, the way they could not put the Bears away on Sunday night probably raised a few eyebrows. And then when you saw Brett throw that, you know, pretty bad interception deep in his own territory. Turnovers have meant something to the Packers this year. They only turned over the ball five times in their first four games and won them all. And Sunday night they turned it off five times all by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the Redskins, I think, are really the story here. And, you know, the one thing about Washington, this offseason, opposed to many of their offseasons under the Daniel Snyder regime, is they didn't do a lot of movement this year. There weren't a lot of trades. There weren't a lot of free agent signings. There weren't a lot of upheaval. And I think they have a roster which they're comfortable with. The rookie, LeRon Landry, it really solidifies the secondary. This was a team that was terrible taking away the football last year. 12 takeaways all of last season. 12 in 16 games.
Mm-hmm.
They had 19 sacks last year in 16 games. They have 13 already. Playing the Detroit Lions once a week will certainly do that to you. But hell, but 13 sacks nonetheless. Their defense has come to play. They can run and throw the football. They're very balanced. And Jason Campbell has been very, very solid. He continues to get better every week. And I think it's going to be a little letdown from Green Bay, lost to Chicago, the way they lost it and so on. And I like the Skins' chances up in Lambeau Field.
Yeah, I was kind of leaning toward the same way. As far as divisional foes for the Patriots, Buffalo has the bye week this week. You've got the Jets and you've got the Dolphins in action. The Jets are at home at 1-4, and they're entertaining another disappointment at 1-3 Philadelphia. Fair to say that the loser of this one, the uphill battle, might be too much to climb? Or if Philadelphia loses, are they not out of it just because of them being in the NFC?
Well, I think they're twofold there. The fact that the Eagles have at least one less game, and if they did fall to 1-4, if the Jets fall to 1-5, it's going to take them most of the season just to get them back to .500.
Right.
But the Eagles, you know, as much as it is the NFC, John, you know, suddenly look at the NFC East, and every team in the division has a winning record right now except for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't dig themselves too far of a hole. They've already lost the game. They've lost two divisional games this year. They've lost at home to Washington. They've lost at the Giants, in which they gave up the 12 sacks. So even with a loss here, and even though we're talking about the NFC, they've already dug themselves a pretty sizable hole. As for the New York Jets, they just can't seem to get anything going offensively. I know they scored 24 points last week, but one was a kickoff return and one was a fumble return. They have no downfield passing game. Chad Pennington's throwing the ball, and unfortunately when he throws it, you can see the words Roger and Goodell in the corner of it. There's just not a lot of zip on his passes right now. It's enabling teams to crowd up the line, and their defense has, I think, been very, very disappointing so far. There's a little historic note, the Eagles have never lost to the Jets. They're a perfect 7-0.
Wow.
Here's what I'll say also about Philly. They need to recapture their one great quarter of the season. They've played four games. They scored 42 points in the first half of that Lions game, the 56-21 win, and they've scored 42 points in their other 14 quarters combined the rest of the season.
Whoa, good stuff. Miami, looking for their first win, and in a world of hurt, literally, playing at Cleveland. And Cleveland, I think, was a little better than most people realized they would be by their performance against New England last week.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. I think, but to me, the Browns seem like they're getting better.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. I would think that the way that they came in and at least caused the New England offense to sort of sit and think about a few things and caused them to do a few more three and outs than normal. I mean, you have to give some credit to Romeo and the way that they schemed, and they did show a little more attention to Randy Moss, and Brady did not have his best day accuracy-wise. But, again, I tend to think that maybe that was more what Cleveland was doing defensively.
Oh, I don't think any question about it. I think I was more impressed with Cleveland on the offensive side of the ball. I think they have certainly made some strides there. I think like their offensive line is starting to get a little settled.
They've got a good offense, especially when you consider they didn't have Jamal Lewis except for one play in the game.
Right, and I think that's what's impressed me was the fact that, you know, he had the one carry for 11 yards. He walked off. He was done for the day. But they still continued to run the football with their other backs. And that means they had a game plan designed to do whatever they wanted to do, and they were going to stick with it regardless of personnel. They've got a good, very, very good wide receiver, Braylon Edwards. Very, very steady tight end in Cal Winslow.
Right.
Derek Anderson's going to make his share of mistakes. But you can see that they, you know, after the debacle against Pittsburgh on opening day, they have shown a lot more confidence on the offensive side of the ball, and that's not really anything we've seen out of Cleveland in about 4 or 5 years.
I would agree. Now, I somewhat jokingly mentioned earlier in the week that Miami and Cam Cameron, he might end up becoming the first new coach to never win a game and then get fired. I don't know that that would happen in Miami, but I don't know how they're looking at it in South Florida, but this can't be a lot of fun for anybody down there, especially in light of what happened to Trent Green this last week with another concussion.
Yeah, and then you go back to last year, they've lost 8 games in a row. You know, you think many people have memories of the Miami Dolphins being one of the more steady organizations throughout the 70s, 80s, and the 90s. But it's been a tough fall the last couple of years. You know, the Ricky Williams debacle, they had that little surge a couple of years ago. A lot of people thought they'd be a playoff team last season, and everything collapsed underneath them, and they just seem like they're treading water in a big way here. And their pride and joy, that defense, is really starting to look long in the tooth. And not sure, you know, Cleveland is a team that's expected to win this game and get back to the 500. Yeah. I think they'll probably struggle a little, but I just don't see the Dolphins with enough, other than the fact that Ronnie Brown is having a dynamite year, especially the last 3 games.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's enough to offset, you know, Cleveland can put points on the board on just about anybody, I think, as long as they hold on to the ball. And I think they'll move the ball against Miami's shaky defense.
Let me ask you something, Russell. You know, just saying things are able to work out, and as poorly as it is going right now in Miami, could you foresee a scenario where they would actually welcome Ricky Williams to come back?
Well, only for the party at the end of the year. You know, if it turns out to be a 1-15 year, I mean, I think, yeah, no, I'm all joking aside. No, I don't see it. I don't see it. I think it's decisions like that that have, you know, put the Dolphins in the situation that they are in. I think they've made a lot of bad decisions. They seem like a franchise that has kind of lost its way. And, you know, even the selection of Ted Ginn Jr., with all due respect, to that draft pick and so on, you know, this was a team that was in need of a quarterback. Ted Ginn Jr. is, you know, a nice player. He's a nice player at Ohio State, but just seems like they're doing a lot of swinging and missing, John.
Yeah.
And they have fallen very, very far, very, very fast in that division.
Very true. All right, a couple of others that I wanted to look at, Russell. First of all, your game on Monday night, New York Giants, the ESPN game Monday night, the Giants playing at Atlanta. And it's hard for me to believe this, but right now the Giants might be the second-best team in the NFC. I think you could make a case for them behind the Cowboys.
Well, they have made a great turnaround on defense. Now, people will say, you know, 24 points last week. Well, no, it was one offensive touchdown. That was it. They gave up the kickoff return. They gave up a fumble return. Their defense has really made quite the turnaround. Remember, they gave up 45 points in that opening Sunday night loss at Dallas. And, you know, the second game, 35 points to the Packers. They have really done, in fact, their last 10 quarters, they've given up one offensive touchdown. Their first 10 quarters of the year, they gave up 13. So they have really tightened things up. And I think the fact that they're playing better defense enabled them to hang around last week against the Jets. And then they made the plays at the end when they had to. And, in fact, it was their defense, the rookie Aaron Ross, who returned an interception for a touchdown that capped off the win.
Right, exactly. Does Atlanta get better? Can they get better with Joey Harrington and the way things are going?
I think Joey Harrington has played pretty respectable football.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And he's got, it seemed like he's gotten better. Now, I was a little mystified at the of pulling him out of the game last week. I don't think he was, you know, really, really struggling. I think it seemed like Bobby Petrino was trying to go for a change of pace and so on. But, he had an interception bounced off a guy's hand. It was thrown a little behind him, granted, but then, you know, that turned out to be the game-winning touchdown. Right. It deflected the interception. So I was a little mystified with that. And, you know, it's a new coaching staff. I think they're kind of trying to find their way. I think the thing to keep in mind here is any good quarterback needs a respectable running game. And one of the things that Bobby Petrino apparently wanted to do is he remade that offensive line be more of a power offensive line to get the ground game going. Remember, this is a team that has led the league in rushing three straight years, a lot of that because of Michael Vick. Mm-hmm. Well, the Atlanta Falcons in five games this year have yet to run for 100 yards right. in any of their five games.
Right. An intriguing game on the AFC side.
Oh, John, do you mind if I throw out one more funny, quirky little history
Please.
Thing about the Giants?
Please do.
The Falcons are in a lot of trouble in this game because they're playing at home.
Right. Now they're in trouble because they're playing at home?
Yes, because the last 11 times the Giants and the Falcons have played, the last 11, this is an NFL record, by the way, the last 11 times they played, the road team has won the game.
Really?
What does that mean? I don't know.
No, but it just means that, you know, the Giants should be, you know, I think a
well,
little bit of slight favorite anyway.
Well, the Giants should win, and they're going to continue this climb after the 0-2 start. They need to get it done.
Yeah, and if the Patriots win and the Giants win, then they're only a game out of first place in the division.
And if the Giants keep winning and the Patriots keep winning, they can both be 15-0 when they meet the last game of the season.
You never know. You never know.
You never know.
That's right.
But that can't be because the Giants.
No, the Giants have lost two times. That's right. So. But it would certainly add a little a late season.
I just want to
intrigue.
See. I want to see if Gary is paying attention. So
Gary never pays attention. 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff. Houston playing at Jacksonville. I'm intrigued because you know the Texans are 3-2. Jacksonville, we thought would be tough, and they're 3-1. Jacksonville is at home in this one, and you know the Texans with their heads above water. You know, in week six.
This is Houston and Jacksonville, and I probably have more neat numbers coming out of this game than any other game this week, obviously besides New England-Dallas, because that's just raw. But Jacksonville, opening weekend, gives up 282 yards rushing to the Tennessee Titans, loses at home. The 282 was a regular season team record as far as yards allowed.
Right.
In the span of the last 3 weeks combined, they have given up 139 yards rushing.
In 3 weeks combined.
to 3 weeks combined, won all those games, and last week set a new team record by giving up only 10 yards rushing in their win at Kansas City.
So you're telling me it's going to be tough for the Texans to run?
Yes, you would think so, but...
Okay.
one of my favorite stats
yep.
of the week. The Houston Texans have basically lost more than twice as many games that they have in their history.
Right.
They're a combined 27-58 since entering the league in 2002.
Okay.
But did you know that they are 6-4 versus the Jacksonville Jaguars? Swept them last year.
I think I recall them having success. I had forgotten they swept them last year, but
so
I do recall.
So they beat the Jaguars. Yeah. Six of their 27 wins in their franchise history are against Jacksonville. And they're a dismal 21-54 versus the rest of the NFL over that span.
Wow! So they like Jacksonville. For some
they
reason.
Love Jacksonville.
Okay. Do you give them a shot? You give them a shot on this one Sunday?
Sure, I do, because I think that what you get with Gary Kubiak is, even though he might not have the horses, and Amon Green's health is imperative here, he's going to keep running the football. He's going to try to keep running the football, and he's now got a quarterback. If he can't run the football, they can certainly make plays and not shop.
Interesting.
Plus. As good as Jacksonville's defensive line in, and they're pretty good, obviously, with Henderson and Stroud, and they're really tough against the run. You know, the young rookies and the second-year guys up front, Mario Williams, who everybody laughed at, has at least 3 sacks this year. Mobe Okoye, their first-round pick out of Louisville, I think has 4 sacks. They're pretty solid in the trenches themselves here. They're being built a different way under Gary Kubiak. And Jacksonville... You just never know with them. Just when you start to get a little confidence about them, they seem to have that off game. It'll be interesting if Houston can pull off the surprise one more time at Jacksonville.
All right. I will mention one other game briefly just because of the teams and their records, but Tennessee playing at Tampa, an interconference thing here, and Tennessee at 3-1. Tampa's 3-2, trying to rebound because Tampa got whacked last week by the Colts. But the Bucs playing at home are undefeated at home, and Tennessee is undefeated playing away from home.
Well, Tennessee, to me, I think Tampa's been a good story so far this year. It certainly has helped the fact that Jeff Garcia has not thrown an interception any game this season. Last week, though, they got it handed to him to a better team. And not only a better team, John, a team that was playing without its starting running back, mm-hmm. without its prolific perennial Pro Bowl receiver, and without arguably its best defensive player, and still beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers by 19 points. Tennessee is really, really good on the offensive line. They run relentlessly. Their defense is getting better, especially on the front line. They have not allowed a point in the fourth quarter this year. Buccaneers need to get off to a good start, and they've been good about getting off to good starts this year. But I think this is a classic case of a decent NFC team running into a better AFC team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. All right, now, as we kind of turn our attention finally to the matchup of the week, matchup of the year maybe, with the Patriots traveling to play the Dallas Cowboys and what we think could be a classic, certainly offensively speaking. I've got a number for you that you might not have known. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. Did you know that the Dallas Cowboys have not scored a touchdown against the New England Patriots in 20 years?
In 20 years?
20 years.
I know the last time they played
was,
I believe, a Sunday night game on our air, which was the 12-0 game.
Correct.
And I believe the time they played before that, which was the last time they played in Dallas, it was New England again.
13-6.
13-6.
And the time before that.
And the time they played before that in Dallas.
Correct.
Was 12-6.
That's correct.
The Cowboys beat them, which was
in 1996.
Which actually would have been,
right.
96 would have been Switzer's Cowboys.
Yes.
And Bill Parcells' Patriots.
Yes.
The year they went to the Super Bowl.
Correct.
So. Logic is dictating that you are probably correct.
Yes, the last time they scored a touchdown against the New England Patriots franchise was on November the 15th of 1987 in a 23-17 overtime win over the Patriots.
And I believe that overtime win was provided by a long touchdown run by one Mr. Herschel Walker.
Herschel Walker, yep, that's correct. Very good.
Up in Foxborough, the old Sullivan Stadium, I believe.
Yes, it was. It's Sullivan Stadium. The last time then they would have scored a touchdown in their home field against the Patriots would have been in 1984 in a 20-17 Cowboy win.
Which I believe was a Thanksgiving Day game.
Yes, that was the Thanksgiving Day game, November the 22nd of 84.
There you go.
So there you go.
Well, what's interesting is teams have not played each other that often. The Cowboys lead the series 7-2, but New England's won the last two after losing the first seven.
Right.
It is also interesting that the Patriots have never won in Dallas as far as the Cowboys go. They're 0-4 on the road in this series.
Okay.
So something's obviously going to give here.
Right.
And especially when you consider just how good the New England Patriots have been, not only against the whole league, but they absolutely, like the Colts, they love playing the NFC teams.
Mm-hmm.
They've won seven in a row, and if you include their three Super Bowl wins, the New England Patriots are 23-4 versus the NFC going back to 2001.
Which is rather impressive, and it certainly gives you a bit of an idea of the relative strength overall, the Patriots being, you know, at or near the top of the AFC overall.
Well, absolutely. I mean, like I said, this game is wrought with numbers, wrought with history. Like I said, the rare instance that you have of a 5-0 team and a 5-0 team playing each other. And
from opposite conferences, by the way, as well. I think that also adds to the significance a little bit. Sometimes you get a Patriot or, you know, a 3-0 or a 4-0 team in the same conference playing each other.
Oh, absolutely, especially divisional games and so on.
Exactly.
Right, but the fact that it is an interconference and adds to the intrigue of possible Super Bowl matchup. And by the way, while we're talking trivia, October 24th, 1971, does that date mean anything to you, John?
October 24th of 71, that would have been, that's the first time the Patriots played the Cowboys, right?
Yes, and that was the first game played at Texas Stadium.
Ah, I'd forgotten that was the very first, because October the 24th was actually late in the year.
Later in the year, exactly.
No kidding.
Exactly.
Well, you know,
this is, for two teams that don't play each other, there's a lot of little intriguing meat. Let's put it this way, if they do meet in the Super Bowl, I've got half my research done for me already.
No kidding.
As far as the historic stuff.
I like it. Like
but let's get on the field here. And when you got to talk about the New England Patriots, you got to talk obviously about Tom Brady right now, tied an NFL record last week by throwing at least three touchdown passes in each of his first five games of the season.
Right.
Our own Steve Young in 1998 managed that feat. Steve actually did in the first five and six of the first seven. He threw two in his sixth game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We got to talk about Randy Moss, who for his reasons – loves playing the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, he does. He has great numbers against the Cowboys.
29. Six games, including playoffs, by the way. 29. 675 and 10 touchdowns.
Mm.
And let me just, I'm going to do a real quick scroll for you here, John.
Okay.
51, 56, 56, 4, 47, 58, 7, 36, 3, and 1. A lot of 50s in there.
Yeah.
Those are the lengths of the touchdown passes he has caught against the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow.
He has 400-yard games out of the six, and he scored at least one touchdown in five of the six.
That doesn't bode well for that secondary, does it?
No, but speaking of that secondary,
and
a team that gave up its share of touchdown passes in the first couple of weeks, lo and behold, the Dallas Cowboys have done a little defensive turnaround of their own.
Yes, they have, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I know that the general thinking is that the Cowboys weaker defensively, but actually, believe it or not, because they've improved, I think, somewhat rapidly over the last few weeks, they're eighth overall in total yardage allowed in the league.
Gave up four touchdown passes in the opening win over Eli Manning and the Giants. Gave up two more to Trent Green in the week two win at Miami. Have not given up a touchdown pass since then.
Right. Yeah.
The last three games. In fact, their defensive unit has not given up a touchdown in the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
Although, when you play the New England Patriots, you always have to be concerned with special teams. And the last 2 weeks, we've seen the Dallas Cowboys give up both a punt and a kickoff return for touchdowns. One to Dante Hall in the win over the Rams, and of course the one to Terrence McGee in the wild Monday night game this past Monday. So, special teams obviously will play a factor in here, especially when you have a guy named Ellis Hobbs who set an NFL record with a 108-yard kickoff return, and Wes Welker who always finds a way to make an impact on special teams.
And quite frankly, I'm impressed with Patrick Creighton. I think he plays very well in special teams as well, and I think he's a threat for the Cowboys.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of intrigue here. I think you have two teams that are playing better defensively, but I think it's two teams that can be moved. You can move the ball on them. You also have the intrigue of, you know, this is Wade Phillips' 3-4 defense, which gave Tom Brady and company a little trouble most of the first three quarters of the playoff game last year. People forget, even though the Patriots did come back and win the game, Brady threw three interceptions in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, everybody remembers the third one because on the return, Marlon McGee dropped the ball and we all know what happened after that. But the first half of that game, John, I'm sure you remember, Tom Brady didn't even complete 50% of his passes. So this 3-4 is a little different than the other 3-4s, or I should say different from the 3-4 that Dallas played last year. Now, of course, New England plays a 3-4 as well. And when I think of 3-4 defenses, there's one thing I always think of, tight ends. Mm-hmm. And we got two pretty good tight ends in this game. Ben Watson, who you mentioned earlier, has caught 5 touchdown passes this year. Jason Witten, who's caught 4.
Right,
one each in the last 3 games, and he's caught at least 1 in 4 of the first 5 games. I think the tight ends play a very big role in this contest.
Well, Watson's coming off his first career 100-yard receiving game last week. So, you know, that Tom Brady feels more and more comfortable about, you know, finding Watson, certainly not in a safety situation, but deep, because he's got the ability to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, the way Brady spreads around the ball anyway, I mean he can line up Ben Watson out wide.
Right,
which they do.
They,
so many different combinations that they can do and so on. I mean, this is going to be a great chess match. A great chess match, and I think it's going to be a game that everybody enjoys. And I'm struggling. I go from hour to hour trying to figure out who I really think is going to pull this out. You know, the historian me almost wishes that it's New England. Just to keep alive that possible New England Indy matchup.
Right.
But I really cannot hazard a guess. I'm not trying to cop out on you here.
No, I won't.
I'm not trying to hazard a guess on this game at all, because
you don't even have an inclination?
My inclination is to lean toward the Patriots, to be honest with you, because I just think they can do other things better.
Right.
And I think this is really, even though Dallas got away with one Monday, which I think in some ways can be a good thing, I'm still waiting to see. I'm still gauging the maturity level of these Dallas Cowboys. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I really am. And I don't want to bring up what's his name, but I'll just be interested to see Terrell Owens and just how this plays out if he's not a major factor in the game and during the game. He did not have an overly wonderful game Monday night. And toward the end of that game, I thought he – now, I'm not trying to be overly harsh – I was very surprised he didn't rip the ball out of the defender's hands in the two-point conversion.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised he didn't hang on to that pass that Romo threw near the end of the game. It seemed like, you know, Terrell Owens still has some question marks in terms of hands. Remember, he dropped 15 passes last year, which led the league.
Right.
He still seems to be a little unsteady. Randy Moss, on the other hand, is already on the verge of surpassing all the numbers he put up with Oakland last year, which isn't saying a lot. But it is saying a lot when one total is 6 games and the other one is 13.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is he's a comeback player for the ages, the way he is doing things. And I think the thing that impressed me the most was last week he really wasn't a definitive part of the game plan, which most times with the New England Patriots, you never know who's going to be the focal point of game plan. And I think that also that the Browns did a great job of keeping him under wraps. And yet you didn't hear one peep or one word or anything from Randy Moss.
No, that's true. You know, Randy has decided definitively to let his actions on the field do most of his talking, if not all of his talking. And
right.
I think a lot of people around here in particular are heartwarmed by that, just because you weren't sure what you were going to get when you brought him in. You thought that maybe the Patriot way of doing things, he would sort of acquiesce and kind of fall in line. And he has done that, and he has exceeded those expectations. So I think now this, you know, behavior that he's exhibiting and letting his actions speak for himself and do all the talking, I think that's kind of expected of him now, to be honest with you.
Well, I think he's done a superlative job, and it seems like he has great rapport with Tom Brady. And like I said, Brady is putting up tremendous numbers. You know, we're a little early comparison about the touchdown record. You know, with Peyton Manning has now, you know, who threw 14 touchdown passes in his first 5 games. Brady's got 16. We're a long ways away from that. But when you're able to tie an NFL record after 5 weeks, like you did Steve Young's, it bears watching. And, you know, the one thing that's always impressed me about Tom Brady is he just always finds the open guy.
Yep.
And I didn't think he played an overly tremendous game last week. He looked a little frustrated, as a matter of fact, at times last week. But when they had to have a score, they got the score. They throw the long touchdown to Ben Watson.
Right.
And that's what competing and winning is all about. And you can say the same thing for Tony Romo. He threw 5 picks, and some of them were really bad. But he still put his team in position to win the game at the end of the evening.
Right.
He got it done. And no one's going to remember those 5 picks. They're going to remember the fact that Nick Folk put that two 53-yard field goals.
Yeah.
Through the uprights, and they stayed undefeated.
What do you think about the controversy that's kind of stirred around this week over coaches calling those timeouts now after teams are getting set and ready to kick the field goal?
I see both sides of it and so on, and I understand it's not in the quote-unquote spirit of the rule and so on, but it, to a degree it is still gamesmanship.
Yeah.
I certainly understand that. You know, if I remember right, the Raiders instance, I'm trying to remember the timeout. We always show, I've seen the video. I believe the timeout had already been called, and Phil Dawson just kicked the ball anyway. It wasn't like he kicked the ball and then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But last week, Nick Folk showed, well, I don't care. Go ahead, call it. Why don't you call it the third time? Maybe I'll put it through from 55 yards.
Yeah, exactly.
But those kicks almost looked identical.
Yeah, they were. Identical kicks, yeah.
That it's not no longer an element of surprise, not only will I think kickers not be fazed by it, I think coaches will probably do it fewer times.
Probably, especially now that it's worked a few times. But all it took was one miss, you know, and Oakland, as you mentioned, and Dawson as well. You know, all it took was one miss, and coaches are going to start calling it again. So,
if you think about it, it's happened three times. The Raiders got burned by it, and then they got revenge for it.
That's true.
Okay,
they did.
So that's an
even
slate.
Right.
And the Cowboys kicked twice and made both.
Made both, right.
So we're all, as far as I'm concerned, we're all caught up.
Yep, I think we're even, Steven.
We're all even. There you go.
Russell, thank you for spending the time with us again today. It's always appreciated. We're looking forward to, obviously, the game here, and we'll look forward to our visit again next week.
Should be a lot of fun on Sunday. I'm looking forward to it, John.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, buddy. It's Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL research coordinator. It's part of his weekly visit with us here on Thursdays, Inside Patriots Playbook. I think he's right. I personally think, at least at this stage, it'll be a little closer than most people expect it to be. I know that a lot of the fans are thinking, you know, it'll be, you know, a little bit worse than people are expecting it to be. But I'm a little uncomfortable thinking that way. And I'm giving the respect to the Cowboys, not so much because I've been a lifelong fan of the Cowboys, but fact is that I think they have a better defense than advertised, as I mentioned. I mean, they're eighth overall in total yardage allowed. They're getting better. They still won a game last week that they should have lost, even in spite of turning the ball over six times. They still found a way to win the game. And I think good teams, really good teams, play like that. Really good teams find a way to win when they just don't have anything going on for themselves. Championship caliber teams play like that. When they throw up a stinker, they still find a way to win it. And to me, that game against Buffalo on Monday night was a step in the right direction for the Cowboys in terms of moving themselves from just a playoff team to a championship caliber team. I think it was that big a game overall for the Cowboys. And so I certainly give them a tremendous amount of respect and credit and think that they have every opportunity to win this game on Sunday. I'm going to stick, I think, at least initially, I said 31-24 to 31-27, somewhere in that realm. And I'll split the difference here, and I'll say 34-26. 31-26 is what I think will end up happening. And the Patriots with a slight edge for Sunday, but I don't think it'll be easy at all, and I certainly think it could come down to a final possession of the game. All right, let's get some emails in here since you've taken the time to write us in with your score predictions for Sunday, and then we'll get off inside the Patriots locker room and let you hear what the players have to say in advance of the matchup with the Cowboys on Sunday. Hour number two here inside the playbook. My name is John Rook, webradio@patriots.com, the email address. And we'll lead it off with Ken in Huntington Beach, California, who says, first, thanks for putting up with my cowboy hating in the email yesterday. It's interesting to note that earlier today when you mentioned that people were sick of the Patriots always winning, such was one of the reasons I do not like the Cowboys. I started following football in high school in the early 90s. That said, you went to high school in the early 90s. Thank you for making me feel old, Ken. Comparing Romo to Favre, I can definitely see that. However, I cannot see a comparison of Romo to Brady or Favre to Brady. They're just different quarterbacks. Brady isn't a gunslinger, never will be. Romo and Favre are. Yeah, I like I told you earlier in the program, I mentioned earlier in the show, I think that I heard the analogy that Tony Romo was a younger Favre-like quarterback. And I said, you know what, that makes a lot of sense to me. Because he does have that, you know, sticking in there even if it's not supposed, you know, supposed to get in there kind of mindset when it comes to trying to, you know, thread a needle with a pass. And obviously we saw last week that a lot of times you're going to get burnt by that kind of a philosophy, but you know what? He's not afraid to take a shot. Ken also says, despite disliking Dallas, I won't rant. I'm trying not to. I do think they have some great players. It's hard not to like watching Tony Romo play. It's impossible to not love watching Marion Barber run the ball. DeMarcus Ware is always exciting. T.O. is not in my taste. Yes, football needs fun, but it needs Ocho Cinco fun, not T.O. fun. I think the difference is that Chad Johnson is really just having good-natured fun, whereas T.O. always seems to have an edge to his antics. He says, score. Close game. Dallas 13, New England 24. Defenses will show up, but Dallas can't stop everything. And the game decider, he says, I have to agree, it's in the trenches, but I'd flip it both ways. If the Patriots cannot establish a running game on Dallas, New England won't win. That's probably true. If the Dallas front line looks like they did against Buffalo, they got no chance. He says, here's a question. Do you feel that Dallas is making too much of this game? I get the feeling they're pinning their entire season on this one game, and if they lose, being a young team, they may fall hard on their face. Even if they win, they may end up with a one-week hangover. It's obvious that they let the New England game get to them on Monday night. You got to give Buffalo credit for trying, but Dallas was just not in that game. What about after the game? I don't know that Dallas is making too much of this. I think they're excited, certainly, to be in this category and to be in this position, because I don't think anybody thought they would be 5-0 to start. In fact, the Dallas Cowboys, since Jerry Jones has been owner of the Dallas Cowboys, Cowboys have not started a season 5-0. This is the first time, and this includes their three Super Bowl championships that they have. They didn't start those years 5-0. So in that regard, they are a little bit in uncharted waters here under this particular regime, now that it's into, you know, its third different decade. And and it has been a while since Dallas has been there. So it's hard to say, you know, hey, Cowboys, act like you've been there. It's been a while since they've been there. And let me also say this. Before we move on here, I do think some credit for the way the Cowboys have developed here needs to go to Bill Parcells, who obviously left behind, a philosophy, if not some talent, on the roster for, you know, Wade Phillips and his coaching staff to step into. And I'm sure that's been mentioned more than once in Dallas circles. So, quite honestly, I think, you know, this is the byproduct of a building process that started with Coach Parcells and now is continuing a bit, albeit maybe under a little bit different direction with Wade Phillips. So, the Cowboys are getting there. They just didn't expect, I don't think, to get there to this point, to have a game of this magnitude in the regular season this quickly. Let's see. Eric in Manchester, New Hampshire says, Pats 34, Cowboys 17. Exact same score as the Patriots and Cleveland Browns last week. Here we go. Heather. Here we go. Go Cowboys. I believe the Cowboys will prevail. They carry a few advantages into the game. Their running duo, Barber and Jones, will wear the Pats' D-line and linebackers down. Jason Witten will get open and have a huge game. Owens will make some plays. Cowboys are at home and the underdog, and that will be enough motivation to carry them to victory. Cowboys defense will slow down the Patriots and give the offense good field position. Patriots will score, keep it close throughout, but the Cowboys play better in the second half. They wear teams down and keep attacking until the end of the game. And obviously this Cowboy fan says, Dallas 27, Patriots 21. Thank you, Heather. Thank you for the email, and thank you for contributing to the show. Your opinions are welcome. In fact, wasn't that the score that Fred said? Didn't he say 27-21, I think? Fred Kirsch?
I don't listen to Fred.
neither do his writers. thank you, Heather. All right, Prince in Virginia says, I have seen most of the Cowboys games this year, and I noticed that for some reason it takes them a whole quarter to settle in and start playing well. I think this is because Romo just needs time to familiarize himself with the specific defense being played. Dallas is also making a habit out of coming back and outplaying teams in the second half. So if they lose the first half of this game, so he says the key to the game is the first quarter. If the Patriots can start early and dominate the first quarter, Dallas won't be coming back this week. And he says New England 37, Dallas 13. Thanks, Prince. I also think getting out to a good start is important for the Patriots. It's important any time you go on the road. But when you go on the road against a quality opponent, you want to take the crowd out of the game as quickly as possible. And if you can get off to a good start and get a lead and force the home team to play from behind early, you're going to be that much better off. No doubt about that. That's a good analogy. Thomas, and he says, beautiful Virginia Beach. The Pats need to start strong running the ball to create the play-action pass. Spread the ball around in the second and third quarters, and then finish with hard-nose running. He says the final score will be 40-33. Pats take the win. Definitely going for the high-scoring affair there. Thank you, Thomas. Let's get one more in here before we get into the locker room. Pat says, I think the Cowboys are a good team for where they are, the NFC. They blew out every team they've played against in the NFC, except the New York Giants, and let the dreadful Dolphins and Bills score 20 points plus on them. Had it been the Chargers, Titans, Jags, or even the Oakland freaking Raiders, he says, yeah, O-Town, I had played on Monday night, it would have been a steamrolling victory for those teams. I also do believe if any one of those teams were in the NFC in Dallas's place, they would be 5-0 or maybe 4-1, really. Patriots got the AFC East by the balls, and he says it gave Dallas, and Dallas gives the other two a chance to win. There is a huge difference, he says, between the best of the AFC and the NFC. Another thing, T.O. is not as much to worry about than Witten. Witten has more receptions, more yards, more touchdowns than Owens. He's a sleeper on this matchup. T.O. just talks a lot and is treating this like a playoff game. Well, they all are. The Patriots know too well how to handle these type of games, especially on the road. I personally feel more comfortable with the Pats playing elsewhere, except for the playoffs. Even Mr. Hollywood Ellis Hobbs knows it's only week six. I'm not going to say Pats go 16-0, but this is not where they lose. Pats win big in Big D, 35-13. Then Pat says, quick question. I don't know if it's been mentioned already, but every team in the NFL has patches for their captains, and I've noticed the Patriots captains don't. Why is that? That's a good question. Gary, do you have an answer for that one?
I don't, but I know they are not wearing them like the rest of the league is.
Well, you've got to know that, Pat, the you have to know that the Patriots march to their own beat, to their own drummer. So the fact that the Patriots don't have a player with a C for captain on their jersey does not surprise me in the least. I think the Patriots do have – they did elect captains during the preseason. And they come out usually on the field, obviously, for the coin toss and all that kind of stuff, but they don't have somebody wearing the C on the jersey, so that doesn't surprise me. That's probably as good a reason as any, I think. So there you go. All right, let's get another one in here. This one comes from Night Owl in Savannah, Georgia. Some questions we didn't hear being asked of Rodney Harrison. How much extra work will he have to compensate for not having regenerative medication? Will his muscles atrophy into him being a less imposing safety? And what will he need to do to compensate? Well, the way that I understand, you know, healing and HGH and all that kind of stuff, and I'm not a doctor and I'm not playing one on the radio here, but the fact is that when you take HGH, it helps the recuperative process, and it can help you regenerate, I guess, the tissue and the fiber somewhat faster. But it doesn't mean that it won't regenerate or build back up if you don't take the medicine. You can still do it the old-fashioned way, you know, lifting weights, stretching, exercises, all those kind of things. You know, the regular workout regimen, it just takes you longer to get there. What HGH does, excuse me, as I understand it, is it will speed up the process. So just because he's not necessarily on HGH doesn't mean that anything is going to shrivel up and atrophy and make him a less imposing physical player. That's not what will happen at all. All he needs to do is just continue his regular regimen, and then you can kind of level off and go from there. So I think that's, again, by my understanding, that's most likely the scenario here. And you'll probably see more and more of Rodney Harrison this week, and you'll probably see more and more of Harrison trying to match up with certainly a guy like Jason Witten, who I think will be a key player for the Cowboys, as a lot of people have already mentioned and a lot of people have already surmised. And you'll probably see Rodney paying a little attention to a guy like Terrell Owens as well. And I also think, and I think Russell Baxter touched on this briefly, I also think that the Patriots should be and probably have been this week working on, you know, stripping the ball because of T.O.'s somewhat questionable hands. So when the ball does get thrown to him, my guess is they're going to come after the football. So you'll probably see a defensive effort made on the Patriots' side to go after the ball as best and as hard as they possibly can. I think that also could be a key, because if the Cowboys do turn the ball over against the Patriots, and they don't even have to turn it over as much as they did against the Bills, but if the Cowboys turn it over against the Patriots, it will be a 37-14 type game. No doubt in my mind. They'll blow them out because the Patriots are that good. But the Cowboys are a good team for exactly, as you mentioned, Pat, earlier, for where they are in the NFC. And if the Patriots don't come and play and they let the Cowboys stay in the game and they manage to turn it over once or twice to allow the Cowboys short yardage opportunities to get into the end zone, and even though we know the Patriots have improved a little bit in the red zone, they've still had some problems defensively in the red zone to this point in time, then certainly the Cowboys can win the football game. Oh, I got one more here for you before we get off to the locker room. This one comes from Nick. Nick says, it would seem to me that the Pats have it at each level of the game excepting one. They're the O-line versus their D-line, the D-line versus their O-line. Their special teams through their cheese. Dallas, will be beat downfield. Brady much more mature in the pocket and ball handling. Brady finds the open man. Romo forces a lot. Receiving core match up. If Owen shows up, it's a good edge to the Pats. He says, the Dallas kicking game, well, I think that it is much more dependable. But he says, Pats 42, Cowboys 26. He says, P.S., the Pats do have captains, but choose not to distinguish themselves by anything but their leadership. Good enough, Nick. And that's sort of along the lines of what we were saying. Patriots just don't signify their captain on the field with the C on the jersey like a lot of teams around the NFL. All right, let's get you inside the Patriots locker room as we've promised. Fact of the matter is that we had a lot of opportunity this week to hear from some fellas in the locker room on their preparations for the Cowboys. It's a big game, so we want the players to give you their thoughts as well, because we can sit here and we can opine and we can give you our thoughts and we can read your emails and I can tell you what I think is going to happen, and that's all fine and well. But let's find out how the players are approaching. Now, they're not going to make predictions for you. They never do. But I think you'll find out that these guys in the locker room down the hallway here certainly have nothing but the utmost respect for the Cowboys and know that, hey, when you have two 5-0 teams, when the opponent on the other side of the field is also undefeated like you are, that's going to grab your respect. And they know the focus of the NFL this week is on this game. So this is the big stage. This is the bright spotlight for this Sunday afternoon game. Patriots are used to it. We'll find out how used to it the Cowboys are. We'll find out if that kind of focus affects the Cowboys. All right, coming up in the locker room, we'll start it off with Tom Brady, Patriots quarterback. Then we go to linebacker Mike Vrabel, linebacker Roosevelt Colvin, cornerback Ellis Hobbs, safety Rodney Harrison, running back Sammy Morris, and then two wide receivers to wrap it up in Wes Welker and Dante Stallworth. So Brady, Vrabel, Colvin, Hobbs, Harrison, Morris, Welker, and Stallworth, all with their opinions on the preparations for the Dallas Cowboys inside the Patriots locker room here in the playbook.
All right, we are ready. Yep, should be a good game. Should be a good game. We've been studying them hard for the last few days, and they present some different challenges. Very talented team. So we need to play our best. So I think they're good in all facets. And anyone who watched that game knows that they're never out of it, you know, this last Monday night. So we got our work cut out for us. Should be fun.
What type of problems does their defense present to you guys?
Well, they're very active. They got a great front seven. They got playmakers in the secondary. I think they lead the league in turnovers. So they do a lot of good things. They do a lot of things really well. They strip the ball, they intercept balls, they rush the passer, they stop the run. We're playing on the road, so it's always a factor with the crowd noise. So.
Is this your first time at Texas Stadium?
Yep. Yep. I don't know. I think this offense is, I think the longer we're together, hopefully the better we play, and we're still getting to know each other. I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
Tom, as a quarterback, you've had tough games, four interception games, a lot of them. How do you bounce back as a quarterback from a game like Tony's played on Monday night? What do you have to do to put that in the past quickly?
I don't know. I don't know. You just try to play the best you can. I think that's – I've always approached it like that. You never try to go out there and do that. So just have confidence in yourself that you'll go out and play better.
Today will mark your 100th career start.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Is that amazing to you?
Yeah, that is. Hell, I was hoping to get 10 games. 100, that's great. I didn't know that. That's very exciting. That doesn't include playoffs, though, does it? Regular season?
Yeah. 100%. This morning, one of the most impressive things about you was that regardless of how you were playing, you were always trying to get better. What in particular this year has been focused for you and your ability to get better?
No, I think everyone's trying to do things better each week. You take the things that you learned from last year, and I think all of us try to protect the ball. It's something the quarterbacks can always do a better job of. Protecting the ball in the pocket, trying to make better decisions. But I think, you know, overall, I think hopefully we can continue to run the ball like we've been running and cause problems for the defense, and that we become, you know, we can run it and pass it. You never want to become one-dimensional. I think more so than anything what this offense has done is we've been a threat when we run it, and we've been a threat when we throw it. So if they want to play heavy pass coverage, you know, we'll try to run it on them. And that's great for a quarterback.
Tom, how similar are these defenses, the Cowboys this year as opposed to San Diego last year when you look at them?
Well, how similar are they? I think it's a similar scheme, obviously, with the same coach, and the same coach is calling the defense. So, and they're very talented players. This team has very talented linebackers, a lot like San Diego does, a big front. Three down guys are big guys. So one gap in defense that penetrates the line of scrimmage, and guys in secondary who can make plays. So hopefully I play better than the last time I played against them out in San Diego. I'm hoping for that. Yeah. I don't remember that so well. I don't remember that. That was the Tuna Bowl. That was Tuna Parcell. That was Tuna Bill. That's all I remember.
Did that spur you at all for, you know, odds, even what they were more to do better as the weeks went on? Or was it just a game where you didn't perform?
Yeah. Anytime you score 12 points, you probably hope you would have done better. But I think we kicked a bunch of field goals that game. I'm glad our defense played really well.
With both teams being 5-0, fans obviously are going to pay a lot of attention to two teams being 5-0. But do you get caught up in that?
Not really. It's another regular season game for us, and there's been a lot of big games around here. So they're a very talented team. We need to play our best game. I think that's what it comes down to. It's a great defense who attacks the quarterback, attacks the football, and they're very good at what they do. So I don't think we're building this in anything more than it really is, which is another game on our schedule. And it's another game that we're hoping to play our best and make improvements. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. Your single strength as long as are you guys? If you looked at you collectively, what would you say the single strength is about the group?
Age, probably. I mean, I think we've all, you know, are pretty much proven players, veteran-type players that have played in different systems, played in this system, played different positions. And so I think we could pretty much interact in any different situation that really could come up.
Mike, is this the game of the year?
You know, I mean, it's certainly a big game because, you know, it's the next one for us. We try to approach them, you know, pretty much the same every week. They're big for us every week. We come in and, you know, we look at the film from the last week and we move past that and try to correct what we did wrong. But certainly, you know, there's going to be a lot of build up to this game with both teams being undefeated and really them playing as well as they are.
Mike, you had a player come out and call you classless. I'm just curious your response to that.
I mean, I'm going to say this one time. I'm sorry that they feel that way. You know, I don't play that way. And I'm sorry that they feel that way, and we're going to move on.
How much does it mean to you that Bill sort of backed you?
I mean, I think that Bill is great for this team. It's great for the players. I think that you know, we try to do a lot for him, and he does a lot for us. So, you know, in a lot of situations, you know, he's there to back us, you know, whether that's during the game, whether that's after the game. I mean, he really, you know, he helps us, you know, get ready. And I think that the thing that he does is he has us prepared every week.
On the film, it looked like a matter of you stumbling a little with maybe one guy not moving as fast as you expected. Is that an accurate?
John, a lot of these people want to hear about Dallas.
I understand.
So let's keep it to Dallas.
Okay, but I just want to make sure we got it right. That's all.
You get it right every week. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, Mike, as accomplished as you are, you get it right every week.
How pulling is that offense? Got some good receivers.
They do, and they do. Witten, he catches the ball. I mean, I think the thing is, it's not just getting open. I mean, he catches the ball, and I have a lot of respect for guys that don't drop him. And he does not drop him. And if it's thrown to him, he's catching the ball. And they look to him, and he produces. And in the tough situations, when they got to have it, you know, they're looking to Witten.
Mike, one thing you guys have been very good at all year is not giving them big plays. How much of a emphasis?
Well, it is every week. I mean, every week, because every team has them. I mean, this league, I think you have to have guys on your team that obviously can make the big plays. You know, our job is to have guys that can prevent them. And, you know, whether it's Rodney or James and, you know, Eugene with his range back there, and then our corners, it's really those guys covering. And then, you know, the front guys, whoever it is rushing, you know, not given the opportunity to throw the ball 60 yards downfield, you got to have a little bit of time. So, you know, it's a collective, you know, group, you know, process that really, you know, eliminates those big plays. And then in the running game, it's just getting guys to the ball. Well, you know, just getting a look at them this morning, you know, certainly not early in the year. You know, the Buffalo game, I think they stopped themselves, you know, really. And that's, you know, they're a good football team. And I think that when their offense is playing well, you know, the defense is able to play on top and to rush the passer and play really aggressive. It'd be a great challenge.
Mike, how do you see Romo developing?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, he has the trust of that football team. He's won a lot of football games, thrown for a lot of yards. He knows, you know, where his playmakers are. And the thing he's doing this year is he's dumping the ball off. He's not forcing it in there. He's not trying to jam it in there, because he's got good backs that once they catch the ball for 2 or 3 yards can run for 15.
What do you recall the last time you played Dallas? Obviously, you broke different. It was 12-0 with two to ball. I think there were 4 field goals, and that was it.
Here? Yeah. I don't remember a whole lot, to be honest with you. I mean, they're a physical football team. I think that's the way they were with Bill, and I think that they're the same team, and they're a physical group. You know, they you know, you look and you see a team that scores a lot of points. You don't necessarily think of them as a physical football team, but they are, you know, on the front line and, you know, fullbacks.
How much more difficult is it to prepare for you haven't seen?
Mike Vrabel.
So far this year on defense, not giving up a big play. Mike was just saying that's emphasis every week in this league, half the guard.
Yeah, definitely. Just like every week we come in, we want to stop the run. You look at putting the emphasis on not giving up big plays, just because you can play a great game and be 0-0 with 10 seconds left and you give up one big play and you lose. So I think it's important that we just continue to, you know, be focused on the fundamentals. That's blocking, tackling, communication, and reading your keys. And once you can do that, you know, you give yourself an opportunity to be successful. And so if we can go down there and execute the game plan properly, then, you know, we give ourselves a chance. But it starts today. Well, actually, it already started, because guys have already been able to watch film. And so today is a continuation, and hopefully we can get a good weekend.
When they have a player like T.O., you have to put special emphasis on him as you prepare this week? Or?
Well, I don't think you can focus everything just solely on him. I think they have Pro Bowl caliber players across the board. And so I think you go in trying to take one thing away. It's sort of like picking your poison. So I think it's important to have all 11 guys on defense focused on doing their job. And once you get your job done, you know, give second effort and hustle to help out the guy that's at the point of attack. Because in the passing game, like I said, if the play breaks down or the guy that they're going to is covered, he can easily go to another guy. In the running game, you know, Jones and Barber, they can pretty much take the ball anywhere they want to. And it's going to be important that we get 11 guys, 11 hats to the ball. Man, I've said it before. I wish everybody in the league would lose. So, you know, if we win all our games and everybody else loses, then that's the only time I'd be happy. But I think it was exciting to see a good game. I think Buffalo, you know, they made a lot of plays. Dallas made a lot of plays. And then it comes down to execution. And it could be that last 10 seconds of the game where you don't execute properly, or as in the guy that kicked the field goal. You know, it took, you know, 2 seconds to kick that ball. You know, that's what you want as a player. That's what you want your teammates to do. That's what the coaches want you to do as a player. And they came through and got the victory. It's not going to change anything that we can do. You know, all we can do is go out and, you know, practice this week and prepare ourselves and put ourselves in a position where we can, you know, when we get an opportunity, we can come up with those plays.
It's bad rap for Mike Vrabel. You think the Cleveland players calling dirty?
I don't know. I mean, that's their opinion. Whatever they want to say is what they want to say. The game's over. If they feel like that is a situation that they want to call Mike bad or good, it's not going to change Mike. I think he's going to be who he is. I think he's been playing long enough. And, you know, I'm glad to have him as my teammate.
You're the second highest scoring offense in the NFL. How good are the
Cowboys? I think they're pretty good. Obviously, like you said, their stats and their numbers speak for themselves. But, again, it's a tough challenge. And across the board, it's going to be up to us to go out there and slow that high-potent offense down. And so we've never been a team to back down. I think we're just going to try to go out and, you know, fundamentally go out and try to get the game plan down, like I said earlier. And, you know, if we can get comfortable in that, then we go out, execute, and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And hopefully at the end of the day, you know, we're on top.
No, it's the approach is always the same, one game at a time, one week at a time. You know, it's a little different feel this week just because of the caliber of the opponent and, you know,
each and every week you face an opponent that can do what they want to do. You face a rusher that can rush for 1,000 yards. You face a receiver that can catch 100 balls for 1,000 yards. You know, a quarterback that's capable of offensive line. So each and every week, I think if you go out there and prepare yourself as if it's the only week, which is how we try to do things, then you know, you're better suited and better prepared to go out there and be, you know, successful in what, you know, you set out to do. When you don't do that, that's where you get surprises. That's when you get a situation where you can't handle. And I think the combination of our coaching staff putting the game plans together, the guys committing themselves to prepare themselves in the weight room, on the field, on the practice field, and then committing themselves to going out and doing it in the game has resulted in where we are right now. That's not going to help us, you know, what we've done, but, you know, we try to keep working hard and hope we can get it done.
Is there anything about Romo's game that
Rosie Colvin?
Sisters, it's an A. You know, it just feels good to go home and play for them because, you know, normally you have to bring them up to a game, or if we go somewhere close to them, you're trying to bring them there. But I'm right there in my backyard, so it's a special moment.
What makes that stadium so special?
You know, I played there as a kid, you know, where, you know, Pop Warner, you know, playoffs, Texas high school football, this and that. So it's just not my first time seeing this stadium. So for me to be excited in that sense, you know, I'm used to it. I know what the atmosphere brings, but at the same time, it kind of feels like home territory.
Ellis, the last few weeks, you've played almost 95% of all the snaps. How much of that is a point of pride with you?
Yeah, that's what I train for. You know, that's what I go out there and train for in the offseason. You know, I'm always mumbling to myself when I'm out there in the offseason running laps, whatever. You know, I actually go back to Texas to train in the heat and things. You know, this is, we're preparing to be out there, like you said, good substantial amount of the time. So, you know, that's what I get paid to do. That's what I'm here for. So let's keep playing.
Ellis, what would it mean to go back and win in front of the family members, but also be the first Patriot team to win in Dallas?
I think you can just cut out all the other stuff and just what will it mean to win? You know, it's another win for us. It's another stepping stone in the right direction. Obviously, with my family, they would be, you know, very hopeful for a win and this and that, and I would love to give that to them, but let's keep it in perspective. We just want to go out there and win. Let the other stuff come.
You guys like to treat every game the same, but this is a battle of unbeatens. There's no denying that. There's a little more intensity.
Yeah, you know, we'll let you guys hype it up. We'll let the media do all those types of things because, you know, win or loss, the season has to continue. You know, even if we win or even if we lose or whatever, the season has continued. This doesn't mean the end of the season for anybody, and this is no projection for anything else. Keep it what it is. It's the next game, so it's the big game.
Other than the obvious physical abilities, what makes T.O. such a good wide receiver?
You know, he's just a go-getter, man. He's one of those guys that, you know, throw the ball to him, and he's going to make a play where, you know, you can knock him, kind of like a Chad Johnson. You can knock him for all these celebrations, you know, for his arrogancy. for, you know, what type of person he is on or off the field. But he goes out there and he makes plays, man. And you just have to be aware of him all the time because wherever he's at, that's where the ball's trying to be.
What do you see when you see Tony Romo in that offense?
Just an explosive offense, man. Just, you know, exploding all the time where, you know, you think you have him down or you think that it's about to be a negative play and it turns into a positive where those guys, they got so many athletes over there and they got so many skilled players, even at the quarterback position, where, you know, every play is live. You know, no, you can't let up.
What are you looking at when you see Tony Romo specifically?
Just a guy that's, you know, that is very good at what he does, you know, being able to run around, make plays also in the pocket. And then he has a special touch on the ball. You've seen him sometimes put the ball in receiver's hands where it has been tight coverage, or he's had to drop it over his own defense here and there. And then, like I said, he can make moves with his feet, you know, get outside the pocket and continue to keep the play alive.
How much is having that shirt up there killing
you right now? It has it. Like I said, it has its negativity, and I've been steaming about it a little bit, but I had to do another guy like that earlier, man, C.J. Jones. I had my jersey over there, so, you know, karma, man. It's all about karma.
Have you played against quarterbacks who have had a bad game like Romo did, at least the interception, and then played the next week against you guys and had a good game? Do you have any sense of he or quarterbacks in general might react to that game?
It doesn't have to be about quarterbacks. I think that's about any type of player. You know, to go out there and to have, you know, statistically a negative game like that, but still to come out with the victory, I mean, you can only look at that as a positive. Like, look at all the negative stuff that happened, but we still won the game. You know, personally, with games like that, that's really when you want to come back at your best to show guys, you know what, I had a bad game, but that's not me. That's not the normal me. So I expect nothing less but the best from Tony this week.
When you saw the film, what did you see with those interceptions?
You know, opportunities. Anytime you see interceptions, turnovers, this and that, you know, whether who's making them, the greatest quarterback or the worst, you know, they're all opportunities out there, and you have to capitalize and still to deal with all of them.
When you look at Romo.
That is Ellis Hobbs, Patriots cornerback, as we continue Inside Patriots Playbook for Thursday. We'll go back into the locker room in just a couple of moments and pick it up with Rodney Harrison. But the Week 6 injury report is out, and we wanted to bring you up to date on who did not and who did participate in practice today. As far as the Patriots are concerned, out of practice today were Wesley Britt and Mel Mitchell. Same thing as yesterday. Mitchell has an injured groin. Britt held out team decision. Limited participation in practice today. Brady, Randall Gay, Dan Copen, Lawrence Maroney, Stephen Neal, Asante Samuel, Dante Stallworth, Adalis Thomas, and Kelly Washington. Everybody else was full participation in practice today. So that's the latest injury report for the Patriots. The Cowboys have not yet released theirs. I'm assuming that will probably come in the next hour or so. All right, as we wrap up the program, let's head back inside the Patriots locker room with Rodney Harrison, followed by Sammy Morris, Wes Welker, and Dante Stallworth.
Rodney, were you rooting for Dallas in that Monday night game to stay undefeated?
I wasn't rooting for anyone. It didn't really matter. It's just had a chance to sit back and get some rest and study their team, and a good one they have, definitely.
What makes them so good? I mean, I know Witten and offense, they're second in the league in points scored.
Very physical on defense, as well as special teams. Explosive offensively, can run the ball, can pass the ball. You know, aside from the game against Buffalo, I mean, Tony Romo's played tremendous, showed tremendous poise, made a lot of plays, and looks like an all-pro right now.
Playing a 5-0 team on the road, is this an opportunity for you guys to find out where you're at measuring yourself?
I think it's like that every week, but probably more importantly, because this is the best team that we face thus far. So this be a good measuring stick for us to see where we're at. We're going to get tested in all three phases of the game, and a great opportunity for us.
What challenges T.O. specifically bring?
Just he's a good player, big, physical, great run after the catch. Shows up big in big games most of the time. And you know, I remember him in the Super Bowl. He had like 9 catches for 145 yards, and he was out there hobbling on one leg. So he's a tremendous player. Very difficult to tackle both of those guys in open field. Very tough runners for their size. Very, very energetic type guys. Marion Barber, I mean, you definitely see it on film with him, as well as Julius Jones' ability to get downhill and just run the ball well. So, you know, we just got to tackle well. We have to make sure that we can't let these guys get downhill because, I mean, they do it all. Cut back, outside, inside. They're good players.
Any comments to Mike Vrabel being called the dirty player by the Browns?
I've known Mike 5 years now. Tremendous football player. Even better person. Family man. Nothing's dirty on Mike except his underwear.
For the second straight week, you guys are playing a team with a tight end who's one of that team's top pass catchers.
Excuse me.
Anything about Jason Witten that you've seen on film this year that makes him stand out?
He's always getting open. He's always catching the ball, and he's one of the elite tight ends. He has the ability to run short routes, intermediate as well as deep routes. Just a tremendous player and definitely one of their key weapons. Is that it? All right. Thank you.
Ronnie Harrison.
Sammy, what do you see going against that defense in terms of what kind of problems they present your offense?
I think they do a lot of things well. They give you different looks for different fronts. Got a lot of athletes back there, a lot of talent, a lot of quickness in the secondary. And like I said, it'll be a tough challenge for us this week.
Nationally, this is being hyped. 5-0 teams, you know, Dallas, New England, et cetera. But in this locker room, in terms of how you guys look at it, is it just an interesting early season matchup?
Yeah, well, I mean, Dallas, you know, they have a good team, you know. And, I've said it before, you know, if we're both 5-0, and I know that's the hype, but, the truth is, if they were to lose the game against Buffalo, you know, they're 4-1, they're still a great team. You know, just not all the hype about the first time or however many times it's been two 5-0 teams. We know that they're 5-0, but, you know, beyond that, they're 5-0 because they have a good team.
Sammy Morris.
Just wanted to come out and really kind of establish ourselves. Learn the plays and make sure that, you know, we're all on top of everything we're supposed to do.
Have you made, as a group, collectively made Tom better?
I don't know about that. I mean, Tom makes himself better, you know, day in, day out doing what he does. So we're just here to just try and fill roles and get up and form.
Wes, when you look at that Dallas defense, the one team that's really moved against them a lot has been the Giants. Eli Pitts won 300 yards. Do you take a lot from that game as opposed to the others to how to attack it?
I think you can take some from every game. And, a lot of it is looking at the techniques and what they play and really trying to, figure out what works best for us. But, I think it's definitely a game that, you know, to look at and make sure that, you're exploiting some of the things they did.
Obviously, they didn't have Newman in that game. He's back now. What kind of difference is he making in the defense?
He's an athletic player and a very good player and been a solid player in the league for a long time. So, he's a guy we definitely need to keep an eye on and make sure that, you know, we're running good routes and stay on top of our game.
Did you watch the game the other night? The Monday night game?
Yes, I did.
Do you watch it with any particular? Do you typically watch Monday night games, or do you watch it with more interest?
Not too much, and really, I caught probably the end of the game. Really, some people call me saying you got to see this game or whatever. So it was a good game, and it shows you how tough of a team they are, and that we're gonna have to play hard for four quarters and really bring our A game.
They're coming off a similar situation that you guys had last week on the road on Monday night. Is it tougher to get back in the groove on a Wednesday following that road Monday night game?
I think everybody goes through it, and it's one of those deals, part of being a professional. You gotta, just come back and be ready to play that next week, and I'm sure, they'll be ready to go.
Wes, from a historical perspective, you get 2 5-0 teams going, doesn't happen very often, only 5 times in history. Do you guys think about that in a while,
Not really, no. No, I mean, we're just excited about, the opportunity to go down to Dallas and play a good game and just really kind of just get ready this week and not really worry about all the other stuff.
You let the media and the fans play with the hype?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're just, we're here to study our game plan, get ready for the game and that's all we can do, not worry about all the other stuff.
Hey, Wes, being around Randy and being his teammate and playing with him now, what have you learned about him as a receiver?
He's smart, I mean, you look at the guy and you wouldn't think he was, but he's actually a smart guy. So, he's a good player, and, I've learned a lot from him, just in the, you know, the short time that we've been together, we've, you know, I've gotten to learn a lot of different things about routes and different things like that. So, all right.
Thank you. Wes Welker.
Any more of a special field this week?
I don't buy into all that stuff, really. I'm not worried about it. It doesn't matter if we hadn't won any games, or it doesn't matter what the records are. It's just our main focus is to go in and, you know, play a good game in a hostile environment against a really good team. And we gotta play a lot better than we did last week. You know, our third downs weren't all the best, and we gotta take care of that this week.
What's that stadium like to play?
It's nice. It's a good stadium. It's going to be loud. The fans are really good there. They're going to be really into it, especially with all the hype you guys are making up about this game. But it'll be fun. You know, it's always fun to play football, and especially, you know, the situation like this where we're playing against a really good team.
Is it more special, too, just the history down there and the fact that you guys don't play down in Dallas very often?
Well, I've played there, so I've played there plenty of times. So, you know, it's like I said, it's a good place to play. It's fun, and whenever you can play, you know, a good team, like I said, it's always going to be a fun environment, especially when you're playing in their stadium.
Dante, when it is like that, as a visiting team, does that give you more of a shot of a fellow, anything like that?
Me personally, I always like playing away. I mean, you definitely love playing in front of your home crowd, but for some reason, I've always had an extra deal about liking to play in away games since high school, but. You know, it'll be fun. You know, it's going to be loud. It's going to be challenging for us being in that stadium, and it's definitely going to be, like I said, something that we're going to have to be adept to as far as taking care of third downs and managing the noise and things like that.
It's kind of a weird stadium with a hole in the middle of it. It's like a dome stadium with a hole in the middle of it.
Yeah, you know, and you know, there's going to be some sunlight. It's usually gone within the you know, by around halftime, but since this is a later game, then hopefully it won't even be there at all.